ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
This verse is from Bhagavatam 15th chapter, 10th canto. It's spoken by Lord Chaitanya when he's explaining the Atmaram verse.
Dhanyeyam Achvadhani Trinavir Dudastvat
Dhanyeyam Achvadhani Trinavir Dudastvat
Thadas Prasodruma Vata Kalaja Vimrishta
Thadas Prasodruma Vata Kalaja Vimrishta
Nadyo Jayakka Gamriga Sadaya Viloka
Nadyo Jayakka Gamriga Sadaya
Gopyonjarena Bhujaya Abhya Srihasi
Gopyonjarena Bhujaya Abhya Srihasi
Tanyaya Lord Krishna speaks to Balaram. This land of Vrindavan, Vrajabhumi, is glorified today because your lotus feet have touched her earth and grass. Your fingernails have touched her trees and creepers. And your merciful eyes have glanced upon her rivers, hills, birds, and beasts. The gopis have been embraced by your arms, and even the goddess of fortune desires this. Now all of these are glorified. So in the purport problem, tells you simply that this verse is from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Krishna to Balaram. What was the situation? Let's discuss that. Om Agnana Jivananda Sarvananda Swadhyaya Sakshana Tami Atasma Shri Kavari Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Purvam Shri Advaita Vasi Vasari Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The situation was just after Gopashtami. Gopashtami you celebrate in the month of Kartik. And at that time, the Krishna and Balaram reveal their boyhood pastimes. Before then, they're in their infancy, between birth and 5 years old or so. But at the time of Gopashtami, they're going into their Padanda stage, in which they are officially certified by Nanda Maharaj as being big enough to herd the full-grown cows. Previous to that, Krishna and Balaram would only be in charge of calves in the area right around the village. But Gopashtami signifies they are grown up enough to take full-grown cows into the forest of Vrindavan. So it is at this age that Krishna begins to reveal his boyhood pastimes, playing with the cowherd boys in the forest. As he's going to the forest, he's playing his flute. That's always there, very important. And the residents of Vrindavan, particularly the cowherd girls, they're watching Krishna go to the forest. The cowherd girls are going to miss Krishna acutely during the day. They're going to experience love and separation, even just by Krishna's going to the forest. Although he'll return in the evening, still they feel morose in a pure, transcendental, blissful way. When will Krishna return? So they're watching Krishna go to the forest, playing his flute. Everything Krishna does is the height of cultural artistry, whether he's marching to the forest with the cows and the cowherd boys or returning.
It's all the peak experience. Now, as Krishna enters the forest, what happens? Another name of Krishna is Madhava. This means the consort of the goddess of fortune. Of course, Srimati Radharani is the original goddess of fortune. Also, Madhava means spring. So, what does the forest do when Krishna is entering it? Because Krishna is Madhava, the forest responds by making it increasingly spring-like. Because Madhava is entering, and Madhava means spring, so the forest of Vrindavan reciprocates by putting forth increased beauty. It's not that the forest wasn't beautiful before, but in devotional service, everything expands on the spiritual platform. So the forest puts forth an extra special beautiful effort because Madhava is entering. And Madhava means spring, so the forest said, then I'll be even more spring-like. Krishna, as he's walking in the forest, all of his five senses become pleased by the forest. In this way we can understand how a devotee should serve the Lord. Everything that we do is meant for Krishna's pleasure. This is not just theory. You can understand that just by studying what happens to Krishna when he enters the forest of Vrindavan. First of all, his eyes are getting pleasure by seeing the beautiful scenic beauty of the forest. And then his ears are getting pleasure by hearing the sounds of the bees, the birds, and the forest animals. And then his skin is getting pleasure because the wind is blowing with tiny droplets of moisture from the Yamuna River. And then his nose is getting pleasure because in the breeze are also the fragrances of various beautiful flowers, stimulating the Lord's sense of smell. And even his taste is enlivened because the breeze is sweet. And so that enlivens the taste of the Lord. Now, meditating on this, you can see that Krishna is a person, and everything is meant for his pleasure. Because the forest was pleasing all of his senses in such a way, Krishna was very pleased by the atmosphere of the forest. I explained this before, I think. There's no matter in Vrindavan. Everything is spiritual consciousness. Everything is a devotee. Everything is someone. So you have to understand that. It's not like when you walk into a park here. Is it called Headley Park or something? Hanging part, yes. That's just a perversion of real forest walking. You can't conceive of walking in a forest where everything is someone and everything is a devotee of Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased by the forest because the forest, it consists of devotees rendering loving service. Sometimes it's asked, what is the rasa of the different creatures in Vrindavan? You know that the human beings, they have rasa in parental love, conjugal love, friendship, servitude, like that. What about the inhabitants of the forest? They also have relationships. In the spiritual world in general, it is said that the devotees, like the flowers and trees and the ground and the water, they're in Chandras because until the Lord engages them in his service, they're inactive, so to speak. And Krishna, they pick a flower, then that flower gets a chance to render service, otherwise it's there waiting. So Shandras means appreciation of the Lord, but not yet active service until the Lord activates you. But it's not like that in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a very special place. Everyone is active in service. So therefore, the trees and the plants in Vrindavan are in servitude, dasharas. And you'll understand that when you hear what happens when Krishna walks deeper into the forest. The forest responds in its own way. Active service. And what about the cows? The cows are in Vatsalya Ras in Goloka Vrindavan because they give Krishna milk, just like a parent. And what about the hills, like Govardhan and other hills in Vrindavan? That is friendship, Sapyaras. So, this is very interesting how intimate the Vrindavan forest is with Krishna. So this verse is being recited by Krishna to Sri Balaram. Because what happens? Krishna is walking in the forest and the trees are bowing down at Krishna's feet, heavily laden with fruit. But Krishna is having a bit of fun and he's saying to Balaram, just see how they're worshiping you. There's brotherly fun. Just see these trees, they're bowing down to you. That he's bowing down to Krishna. Krishna knows that, but he wants to glorify Balaram. That's the principle of the spiritual world. Glorifying others. It's a great Vaishnava delight, glorifying devotees. Maya makes it say that you'll never be satisfied until someone glorifies you. Then you have achieved the supreme destination. You are being glorified. In the spiritual world, it's the opposite. When you glorify others, you feel such delight that you never experience when someone glorifies you. So, the trees were bowing down at Krishna's feet with their heavy branches of fruit. And so Krishna's saying they're doing it for Balaram. He's pointing out all the different aspects of the forest. First of all, this land of Vrindavan is glorified today because your lotus feet have touched her earth and grass. By Krishna and Balaram's walking in the Vrindavan forest, they are blessing the earth. But also, there's other aspects to what happens when they walk in the forest. They give anxiety to the gopis. Because Krishna doesn't wear shoes, he goes barefoot in the forest. By his barefooting in the forest, he's blessing the earth. But he's giving anxiety to the gopis because they're thinking, oh, his feet are so soft. How can he endure the pain of walking on pebbles and twigs in the forest? So this shows you another way how there's so many different aspects to what Krishna does. Of course, that anxiety and pain that the cowherd girls feel is not a material pain or anxiety. It's so centered on Krishna that it's completely pure. And when something is completely pure, that means it's completely blissful. So it's blissful anxiety. One day, I hope you'll get to experience that blissful anxiety. Generally, anxiety is a very harrowing experience. But in Vrindavan, even anxiety is blissful. Your fingernails have touched your trees and creepers because Balaram would reach and touch the branches, picking a fruit or a flower, and that way he would touch these devotees. And his eyes, Krishna pointed out, Balaram, when you glance over the rivers, hills, birds, and beasts, everything becomes auspicious. But most of all, what happens with your arms when you embrace the gopis? They get the greatest fortune, which even the goddess of fortune desires. Now all of these are glorified. Lakshmi Devi Vaikuntha is attracted to Raj Leela, but it's not her position. She can't be there. So she got the benediction that she could stay on the chest of the Lord as a golden streak. As Krishna and Balaram would wander through the forest, they would play with their friends. Krishna would do many things. They would see peacocks, and Krishna would imitate the dancing of a peacock, moving his neck just like a peacock, making his friends laugh. Krishna would imitate the buzzing of the bees. He's giving his friends pleasure. This is the Supreme Personality Godhead, pleasing his devotees. Sometimes they would hear sounds of ferocious animals, and Krishna and the cowherd boys would run away, imitating the animals who are running away at the sound of a lion and tiger. But actually, it was Krishna who was imitating the sounds. And then Krishna himself and the cowherd boys would run away from the sounds that Krishna was making. Try to explain that to your mundane family and friends. This is the God we're worshiping. He roams through the forest with his friends, making imitation lion and tiger sounds, and then running away out of fear from the sound that he himself makes. Sometimes Balaram will become fatigued. How is it the Supreme Lord becomes fatigued? I think we've already explained that out of pleasure, not because of, not like a material body that becomes tired, but just let me enjoy the feeling of fatigue. I'll lay down with my head on the lap of the cowherd boy. Everything is for pleasure. Everything is absolute in the spiritual world. Whether you're fully rested or fatigued, it's all transcendently blissful and perfect. It's just another way of tasting nectar. So, apparently, Balaram's fatigue, he lays down with the head on the lap of the cowherd boy. And Krishna himself comes and massages Balaram's feet and fans him and brings him river water. And then, other times, farther in the forest, Krishna and Balaram would stand holding hands, watching their friends sport, playing various games. The cowherd boys would want to please Krishna by their playing. They want to show, Krishna, look how nicely you are playing. They want to stir the rasa, the flow of the relationship. They're friends, so they want to show Krishna, see what good friends we are, how nicely you are playing. They know that would give Krishna pleasure. And sometimes Krishna himself lays down with his head on a big root of a tree or on the lap of a cowherd boy, and the other cowherd boys serve him. So in this way, the whole scene is one of auspiciousness because everyone is serving Krishna. Krishna sees the forest in that way. Just see these devotees. Look at the individual service they're offering. Of course, he said it's all for Balaram, but he knows it's for him. We should also see the service of all devotees. See how they're trying to serve the Supreme Lord in some kind of way. A devotee is known by the service he or she is doing. So we should become skilled to see the service and also the service potential in everyone. Sometimes you're not honoring a devotee for service that that devotee has done. You're honoring the devotee for the service potential that that devotee has. That's an important point to remember. While Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys were sporting in this way, the cowherd boys came up with a very interesting proposal. Krishna, we heard, don't you know about the Talavan forest? There are fruits there that are so sweet. You can't believe the taste of those fruits. There's only one minor problem. This forest is guarded by ferocious, man-eating jackass demons. They even eat people. Birds are even afraid to fly over this section, this Talavan forest. Oh, the fruits are so sweet. We can smell them from here. Don't you smell it, Krishna? Now, were they getting lusty? Were they simply thinking of their senses? Now, Sri Vinay Goswami explained that the request was made with prema, with pure love. They were wanting to taste the Talavan fruits as a way to get Krishna to enjoy the fruits. They're always thinking of Krishna's pleasure. That is the difference between love and lust. They seem like they're thinking of themselves. They call out, Rama Rama Mahabhava, Krishna Drishta Nirvahana. O mighty arm Balaram, O Krishna, the destroyer of all impediments, all miscreants. You can kill demons, and what about, we've got a demon of hunger attacking us. You want those fruits, don't you smell it in the air? So, they made this proposal to Krishna. They explained the whole situation. Some jackass demons are there. They're very dangerous, but you're Krishna. You're our friend. They don't think you're the supreme personality of Godhead. You can easily kill them. No, they're thinking you're our friend. You can handle anything. So, if you think this proposal is suitable, allow us to present it to you. These are Krishna's intimate friends. Subal, Stoka Krishna, Sri Dharma, him making a proposal like this. So, what was Krishna and Balaram's reaction? They laughed hearing about the jackass demons.
Jackass demons. Why should we be afraid of them? Let's go!
So, you know what happened when they got to the Talavana forest. Balaram immediately caused the disturbance to agitate the demon, and Vainakasura came charging forth. And Balaram easily took care of him by grabbing him by his legs and twirling around in the air and throwing him in treetops. And then other jackass demons came to attack. But this time they thought, we better go for Krishna. We've seen Balaram, maybe he's a little too much. We'll choose Krishna. Or the Acharyas point out, it could be that Krishna stepped in front of Balaram. I'll take this one. In any case, they attacked Krishna, and Krishna did what his brother did. He grabbed the demons, the ass demons, by their legs, twirled them around into the trees, one after another, just to race for it. You couldn't think of having more fun as a little kid than this. Being attacked by a flock of wild asses. That's why you're in the forest. You're not in the least bit anxiety. They gallop up to you and they strike you with their hooves in your chest, as they did to Krishna Bala. It was like being hit with flower petals for the Lord. You know what happens if a horse kicks you? It cracks your ribs. People can die from that. But no problem for Krishna Bala. They kill the demons in a very artistic, colorful way, grabbing them by the legs into the trees. And in doing so, they made a beautiful painting. The trees were full of darkish bluish ass bodies, dead, with red blood flowing. So, and then the greenery of the trees, the bottom place up, this is a very beautiful scene. Whatever Krishna does is the height of beauty. It's the height of artistry. Even when he kills, it turns out to be so beautiful. Just like when he killed Putana or Akshashi. Because her breast was sucked by Devi Krishna, after he killed her by sucking out her life and kicking her and punching her with little hands and feet, when the cowherd man went to burn her dead body, a very pleasing aroma, sweet aroma, filled the forest. Because she had been in contact with Krishna. So whatever Krishna does, it produces beauty, more beauty, produces the best of artistry. So just think about the Talavana forest, the trees full of dead ass bodies, flowing with blood, but the colors, the colors of the whole scene are the height. No Rembrandt could imitate this. The best of the artists in the world cannot match the beauty that was created so casually by Krishna and Balaram throwing ass demons into the trees. So then, Krishna, cowherd boys, Balaram, they return to the village of Vrindavan. Krishna's hair has dust in it, from the day's work. But that dust in his hair doesn't decrease his beauty, it increases his beauty. It's just a different style of beauty. And so as Krishna marches into Vrindavan, all the gopis are watching, looking out of the sides of their eyes. Because they're chaste, but at the same time they're completely in love with Krishna, so they're staring at him intently out of the sides of their eyes. In this way, their feelings of separation during the day are removed. And then Krishna and Balaram go to their home. Mother Yashoda and Rohini bathe them. Does the Lord need to be clean? He's the supreme purifier. That's why before the fire, you know, you say, Om Apavitra Pavitra. Krishna is the supreme pure. Yet, because Mother Yashoda loves him in this way as a mother of Sayaras, she's bathing him, dressing him, and then feeding him. And after a wonderful meal, she lays Krishna down on his bed and he goes to sleep. So in this way, the Lord spends his days and nights in Vrindavan. In this way, all the devotees render their particular service to the Lord. And the Lord appreciates even the trees, the flowers, the animals, the plants, the breeze, everything about all the devotees in Vrindavan. You see, when you talk about the devotees in Vrindavan, you're not just talking about the people. You're talking about the forest also. So Krishna appreciates it all, and he glances at the forest with appreciation. He's pleased by the forest service attitude. Now, demons are only there in Boma Vrindavan, earthly Vrindavan. Earthly Vrindavan is as good as Goloka Vrindavan. It's a very small technical difference. In Goloka Vrindavan, there are no demons attacking, but there's talk about demons. But no demons ever attack. There's no demons in the spiritual world. That's why Boma Vrindavan, Leela, the pastimes of Krishna and earthly Vrindavan have these special flavors to them. In the Goloka Vrindavan, there's just whispering and talk. The demons are even attacking. There's never any demons. There's whispering just to add flavor to the scene. So, we can learn from Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan how to appreciate the service of devotees. Even we can appreciate the potential for rendering service, and we can honor that potential. Sometimes materialists who are philanthropists, charitable workers, they talk about honoring the potential of all the citizens, especially those who are poor or disadvantaged. We should maximize their potential. You don't know what they could turn out to be if their potential is honored. We know what will happen to a devotee if that potential comes out. We don't have to doubt. It's not that if we give this child, this kid a bursary, what will he do if he goes to school, to the uni? Will he just party day and night and not study? Or will the student really study and graduate with top grades and then go looking for a job that doesn't exist? In Krishna consciousness, we can truly honor the potential of everyone. Because it is a fact, if any devotee properly follows the bhakti process, that potential will come out. So therefore, we're not sentimental and dreamy when we honor the potential of all devotees. Still, it's a fact, as it's most ecstatic when service has been done. It's most ecstatic to honor devotees when they've acted on that potential. And as I explained before, even if that potential has been acted on in the past, still, there's no harm in respecting devotees, honoring devotees for past achievements. This is all a part of learning to live in the Vrindavan atmosphere. how to appreciate all devotees for what they're doing, their particular kind of service to the Lord, and their potential in that devotional service.
All right.
I think that's enough for today. Any questions?
Sometimes we see these disasters in the world, you know, the Russian event and the tsunami, and we know the philosophy is that yes, it's indeed their sinful reactions. And does that automatically mean we shouldn't feel any kind of material compassion?
Or material compassion is felt by a material body. Devotees have much deeper feelings than material compassion. Material compassion is very shallow. This is hard for non-devotees to understand. They think that because we don't react materially, perhaps, that therefore there must be a shallowness of feeling. But no, a devotee's compassion goes much deeper. They cannot understand it. A devotee sees the real disaster that people are losing their human form of life. So in comparison to that disaster, everything else is smaller. But the devotee doesn't have to see anyone suffer. But we know that the greatest suffering is happening all the time and no one cares. This is our predicament. We see the greatest disasters. Just like Prabhupada told us when he was at the airport. You see this airport bustling with people, active and alive. I simply see dead persons. I remember I was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and the devotee asked him, what will be the destination of most of these people who are on the earth, the human beings that are on the earth planet right now? Now, according to New Age philosophy, they're all evolving towards perfection. Srila Prabhupada said, most of them are going to go into the animal species. So this is what you're dealing with. This is the greatest disaster. This is the greatest earthquake. But because no one sees it, we ourselves, as emergency relief workers, can also be lulled into complacency. But this great disaster is happening all the time, all around us. So the devotee's compassion is like an ocean compared to someone who doesn't understand what's going on. Their compassion is like a little creek, a little stream. So it's not that we just laugh. We certainly don't laugh at seeing such atrocities, but we just put in perspective. We understand what the greatest tragedy is. We don't like to see anyone suffer. You're not the body, but that doesn't mean we like to see devotees suffer. Oh, don't worry, Prabhu, you're not the body. When devotees are sick, it's an opportunity for you to render service to a Vaishnava and help them. It's a very good opportunity because when devotees are sick, they can't stop you from serving them. So, you know, you really jump on the opportunity. They feebly protest, no, don't bring any water. But they can't really protest. So you can really, you know, get a lot of service opportunities when devotees are sick. So we're not gonna just don't stand up. Well, she's not the body, so Krishna will take care of her. Krishna will take care of her, he's not the body. No. You think, wow, this is an opportunity to serve as a devotee. I can really get away with it now. This is all part of Vaishnava sports. These are the pleasures of devotional life, serving devotees.
Is your still higher than the risk of committing suicide from youth and also in cancer? Is it on an individual basis, or is it more related to also immediately? The simple reaction immediately?
Yes, you get simple reaction from the eating. Yes, it is true. For teen suicide, New Zealand is abnormally high. I've also seen the statistics recently. That's just a reaction. reaction to living sinfully and not understanding the purpose of life. So yes, we commit suicide. Suicide itself is not a karmic reaction, though. Is that what you mean? No, suicide itself is not a karmic reaction. But disease is. Suicide is completely something outside of the network of karmic reactions. It's a voluntary choice to do something which could be illegal. It's like a prisoner getting out of jail by breaking out. It's against all the laws, and what happens when the prisoner is apprehended? Your punishment increases. You can only get out of jail the right way. That so many persons are choosing to commit suicide means they're living in a very deluded atmosphere. It shows you how illusory the material world is. When I'm overseas, some of you, I don't know if anyone here, maybe Dayavir, you know, there's Premar Krishna. When I tell like devotees in South America or Russia about the New Zealand dole system, they just eyes just, wow, how would you do anything to live there? You get money, you just, can you put your bank account from when you're how old? 17? 16? Wow, this is paradise. Dollars, you know, real currency, you know, New Zealand dollars, put in your bank account just because you were living in that country. They can't conceive of this. These people must be so happy. They must be. Here I am slaving away, you know, working so hard to make ends meet for the minimum, and these people just get it all. Wow, how happy they must be. They all say that, how happy they must be. And then I tell them, oh, but, you know, it's got one of the highest rates in the world for teen suicide. They just can't believe, what? You get money and you still commit suicide? Yeah, they can't comprehend it. Because their whole life's a struggle. In Russia, the very rich are very, very rich, and everybody else doesn't have much at all. In Russia, you can be a doctor, and you're paid the same as, like, a street sweeper. People work for months without pay because they are afraid to leave that job, even though they're not getting paid. They just stay for the hope that in the future they'll get paid. So it's quite a common thing. They're embarrassed to tell foreigners this, but this is the reality. They'll work without pay at a job, faithfully, because they have no choice. Even though I'm not getting paid, there's a chance I could be paid in the future. And I don't want to go away because I have no hope of getting a job. I have to hold on to this, even if I don't get paid. How many of you would work one day without getting paid? Suppose you went to work at 9 a.m. in the morning. Who works here? Who's a working person? Jeff? Left? You're working? Suppose, and you, the boss, as you go in, you know, we're having a bit of financial difficulty. I hope you don't mind, but, you know, they're not going to be able to pay you for a while, you know. So, please sit down and do your work. What would you say? Excuse me, but I've got some things to do at home. Call me when you got yourself together. Anyone else here? Majumaha, you work without pay. Yes. Yes, you do your job without pay.
Yes. How many
will
be in
the Bay Area?
Huh?
And
you're
off
the
end
for
trying
to give this time.
Oh.
Maybe just.
Why would you do it?
Because.
Agent for loyalty
as well.
For how long?
I don't know that.
Well, if you ask me, I'd probably say not to do it. Then we have a big debate. You want to work without pay? We got plenty of servants around here. Sacrificial devotees who works hard supporting the preaching of Krishna consciousness. very expert business lady. You know, we need some negotiations done. We call for Mandramala. She strikes terror in the hearts of the landlords. So, working without pay, but this is considered normal. Sometimes you get paid, and like if you work at a tire factory, they say, we can't pay you. Here's five truck tires. See, you know, and what people, you know, what can they do? They just take five truck tires, they go out in the street and try to flog them, they try to sell them, you know. Just stand on the side of the street, you know, five big truck tires. Anyone want to buy this? Because that's the only way they're going to get any money. You work in a clothing factory, they can't pay it, they just, you get a heap of clothes, this is all they can do, is, you know, take it and sell it. That's how the society goes on. So I may hear about, you know, the welfare, social welfare system in New Zealand. Wow, this is just incredible. I was living there, I had it made, I'd be so happy. And I said, by the way, I'll tell you what's going on there. They just can't believe it. Who are those people?
They're in heaven.
So, it shows you the illusion of Maya. You think if I had this, I would be satisfied. But those who have it aren't satisfied. Yes.
And it was one people with the idea that they could get birth in an animal body in the next life. And a lot of people saw the reaction, oh, you know, it's not that bad. And, you know, it's maybe a lot of fun to be a rabbit or, you know.
They tell you that on the street?
Yeah.
What do you say then?
I tried to explain that a great suffering of ignorance, but they maybe at the moment I can't be excited, so that's my question of how they really make them aware of how much suffering it actually is.
Yes, this is how deep the ignorance goes. They don't understand the suffering in animal life, which is mainly you don't have the developed consciousness to shape your own life. You're just led around by the material nature. You can't hear about Krishna. You can't hear and act in a way that will improve your situation. You're just responding to immediate sensory perceptions. That is frightening. And I've always explained how Srila Prabhupada told us on one walk that when you go down the animal species, it's not that you just become a dog one time or a horse one time. You've got to become every type of dog, every type of horse, before you come back up to the human species. Just the Shastra is generalizing when it says you go down the animal species and you come up. But the fine print on the deal is that every type of dog, every type of chicken, every type of pig, this is why it's considered such a disaster. Gradually, you just keep preaching and distributing and you'll be able to explain in such a way. Meanwhile, just be friendly to them. And they'll say, oh, anyway, she doesn't understand it, so it would be such fun to be a pig or a dog, but she's a nice girl, we'll take a book. That's how you deal with that. Don't, unless you're very expert, don't try to challenge people's ignorance. Often you're wasting your time. If you got some prasad, stick it in their mouth. Or just be nice to them. But to challenge ignorance, Krishna will give you that ability after a while, but it takes some time to develop some practice. You can tell them, if you want to be bold, say, okay, become a pig now. How will you feel? Well, not now. This will keep your idle mind. This is the mind of the good. Not now, but you know, I wouldn't mind later, but now I have things to do. But later, after I die, I wouldn't mind. No, that means they don't want. They don't want it now. Now you become a pig. And someone cuts you into pork chops. You praise Krishna. intelligence gradually if you're serious about the occupation. Anything else? Yes.
What kind of reaction for the whole country? I find that like some countries have got better way of living.
Like Korea.
And that's what I think is true, and that's what I think.
Like Korea.
Yeah. Korea.
They don't drink there.
Then it's not so common to take that sort of initiative.
They don't drink so much?
They drink a lot, but
that's not intoxication.
That's not just drugs. So
that's also the bad stuff. Just nice alcohol for social purposes, right? It's there to a very little degree. Very little degree. You can say two things that is due to the unfortunate situation of the people. And you could also say yes, devotees have to try harder to make. They try this difficult place. But if it's possible in China, it must be possible in Korea. They take to Christianity very easily. But it's not so difficult to be a Christian, you know. All you do is believe. You go on eating whatever you like. You don't have to worry about controlling your senses. Just believe. Jesus did it all, so you just believe. So my mother, she tells me, why do you stress these four rules? That's pride. The Bible said everyone is a sinner. So you just sin and humbly, and Jesus forgives you. You're proud. You're following these rules. This is arrogance. The Bible says all have sinned. So there's only one hope for the blood of Jesus. Why do you try to follow rules? That means you think you're not a sinner. Therefore, you're proud. This didn't convolute. Of course, there are some very few Christians who do understand the actual teachings of Jesus. Hard to find them. Very hard to find. So it's very easy to spread something that has no demand. Just believe. Believe, come to church for an hour or two once a week. I believe you if you did that. No regular principles. No required chanting around. Just stay in your homes and believe. So, for something that's not very substantial, it's very easy to get followers. Krishna consciousness is the highest thing being given at the lowest time. So, you have to be a bit patient. Up until now, Korea and Japan have been a real riddle for spreading Krishna consciousness. Japan even more. Because Japan, so much effort has been put into Japan. And just so many books have been distributed. That effect will be there, of course. But to actualize that effect immediately is very difficult. And in Korea there's been a language barrier. People say it's more difficult to learn Korean than Chinese or Japanese. I have one PhD man I talked to. He knew 8 languages fluently. He said, I can't crack Korean. It's just so difficult. And what is it about? It's so difficult. That's all. That's all, huh? Come, did you try to learn anything? What's it?
I thought it was quite nice
that
it
had
26 characters
instead
of
20. Oh, you're one of those language persons. We shouldn't ask you about that. You know, most persons are really offended, so they just pick up language as easily. But anyway, for most persons, it's a difficult language. But it doesn't mean nothing can be done. It just means that for some reason the time hasn't come yet. We don't have many books in that language. I think someone just finished Bhagavad Gita. I don't know what the quality of the translation is. Oh, I just have these little books, not well translated. I don't know if you've ever seen them. Years ago, in the past, in the 70s, devotees tried to preach there. In the 80s also, they were thrown out. And so, they did Korea for that reason, because devotees were thrown out who came from Aurora. They did Korea didn't get that influx of youthful energies that pushed on missionary activities in other parts of the world. But I'm sure that time will come. Yeah, there's so many devotees in China, so it just takes someone to apply themselves to the situation. That's actually the real answer. Someone has to apply themselves. When I first came to New Zealand, I remember so many God brothers were telling me, oh, the Kiwis, they're not going to take the Christian classes. They had a few moments in the past, but you know, they're polite, but they're just not going to get into it. You just preach to them and they'll just be very polite. Very interesting, but then they'll never take it off. Everything is very nice. There's all deceptive there. They're very nice and courteous. You preach, you think, oh, such a great reaction. But when they'll never come forward and do anything, somebody told them. Come to Australia, that's where it's at. There's folk tale for every part of the world. But then in Australia, they tell you, Australians don't read. Don't worry about stupid English here, they don't read. It's always good not to pay so much attention to these folk tales. Yes, I was told that about New Zealand. They had a few glory days in the past when there were a lot of devotees, but that was just kind of like a freak occurrence. Didn't last because the people are just you know, in their own kind of mood and, you know, too late. Laid back but polite. Don't be fooled by their politeness. Why waste your time there? So these, you know, these folk tales and mythologies are everywhere. It simply takes the application of bhakti and then you get Lord Chaitanya's attention. It is true some places are immediately better than others. That is true, but it's also true that sooner or later, if someone applies themselves through thick and thin, the result is there. Just like one devotee who Prabhupada sent to preach in Japan in the 60s, he told us, and he left Krishna consciousness around 1975 or 76. God brother Sivama. And he passed away some years ago. And in his last months, he reminded the devotees of Prabhupada had said, whoever tries to preach in Japan, he'll personally take back to Godhead. And he wasn't in very good consciousness then in his last months. But because of his service in the past, the devotees let him leave this world by living in the temple in Los Angeles. So he was dying from AIDS. And he was out of it most of the time. And then one day his mother came to the temple. His mother was always favorable to Krishna consciousness. She said, I had a dream of Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, I come to get your boy. And then a few days later, right before Sudama left this world, he was just out of it, in and out of coma, just nap,
all of a sudden he stood up. And he didn't know, he was like speaking, he didn't understand that devotees were around, he didn't know where he was, just out of it. Prabhupada is here. And then he just collapsed back into bed. And a few days later, he left. So, that's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, no one is more dear to me, no one will ever be one more dear to me than the one who tries to spread my glories. To try and fail is far better than never trying at all. So this devotee, you might say, he couldn't keep it together, he couldn't follow the principles, he failed, it looks like. But still, Krishna didn't forget. You tried to do something very difficult. So just think what your reward is if you continue on the path of bhakti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.